The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Mem Hei. We're now going to continue learning Simen Kuf Mem Hei. And we are holding at Sif Yud Daled. Now, this siman continues to discuss different halachas regarding marriage and certain situations where Chazal, for various reasons, put certain restrictions on when or with whom marriages could be performed. Let's begin inside in the Kitzer in Sif Yud Daled. Imhimu Beres Aymenika. So we have a woman who she's either pregnant or she had the baby ready and she's nursing, and now her husband passes away. So the Kitzer tells us, Lo tinas liish acher, she should not get remarried, she's not allowed to, achi yehe levlad esrim v'arbo chodesh, until the child is 24 months old, meaning 2 years old. V'afilu yolda l'acher sheneskarsha, and even if this child was born after she was divorced, or she became a widow, and the child didn't even begin nursing yet, she needs to wait. If there's something urgent, some extenuating circumstance, they should ask a big rabbi to rule on it. Now, to give you a little background on what's going on over here, there's a concept known in halacha as menekes o muberes chaveray, which means either a woman who is nursing or a woman who is pregnant. And Chazal were concerned that if this woman gets divorced or becomes a widow and she gets remarried, and now she's going to subsequently become pregnant, so that's going to make her unable to nurse the child anymore, because many women, when they become pregnant, they stop being able to nurse. Now, in the times of Chazal, there wasn't formula, or even if there was, but some people maybe couldn't afford it, and what would in essence happen would be was this baby could possibly starve. And because of that, Chazal were very concerned, and they made a takana, they made an enactment that under no circumstances could a woman get married until this 24-month period is over. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan, an important commentary on Shulchan Aruch, explains that even though one might say, well, today formula is very popular, or you know, people feed with bottles and all these types of things, but when Chazal make a gzera, they made it in mind, even though in most situations it's not going to be a problem, but in certain, even for a few individuals it might be a problem, but they have the foresight to realize that. And therefore he writes very strongly how even in today's days, where times may be different, this gzera is in full force. Now, there are discussions, let's say, if it's in the best interest of the child, if the mother gets remarried, or other types of situations, there are discussions if that could be room for leniency, and this is something that needs the advice of a very big rabbi. This is something that usually a regular rabbi doesn't deal with. It's a specialty, and this is at least the basic concept. Now let's continue with Sif Tezvav. Yisha Shemei Sula Shnei Anoshim. A woman who was married twice, and both times her husband passed away. He should not marry a third one without asking a competent rabbi. And again, this is touching upon another very complicated and difficult concept, and that is what's known as chaslanus. Chaslanus means that Chazal understood that certain things, if they happen more than a number of times, that there could be some sort of pattern and could be some sort of danger involved in it. So normally we know that if something happened three times, then we have to assume it may happen again. Over here, it only happened two times, but still, because we're dealing with an issue of sakana, what's the issue of sakana? That Chazal understood that a woman could possibly cause, for reasons of mazel and things we don't really understand, her mazel could cause that her husband could die. So therefore, if it already happened two times, we have to be concerned maybe it'll happen a third time. Now, the Paiskim discuss many limitations to this concept. One of the limitations that's brought up is, it could be we're talking that it's only when the husband died of natural causes, but if he was in an accident, something like that happened, then it wasn't natural causes, so therefore it doesn't have to do with mazel. That's one approach given. Another approach given is that if the husband didn't die soon after the marriage, but after they were married a number of years, that could be another reason. Another reason is if he died because of old age or because of a sickness that he already had or something like that, then it's not really associated to her. So again, this is something that needs rabbinic guidance. They do try to work things out, you know, if it's at all possible. But again, it's something that's complex. Let's continue with Sif Tes Zion. Now, we're getting to probably the most complex concept that rabbis through the last hundreds of years dealt with, which is known as a neguna. What is a neguna? It's a woman who something happened to her husband, and we're not sure, it can't be verified that he died or not. You know, this started from questions of shipwrecks to people serving in the army to most recently the Twin Towers and 9/11. All these are situations where people died, and there's a question of documentation. How do we know for sure that these people died? Because we're dealing with a very serious Isser. We're dealing with the Isser of Eishes Ish, of adultery. So therefore, we have to verify in a proper way that it's true that they died. So this is what the Kitzur tells us. The Kitzur just touches upon it to let us know that it exists, but being that the Kitzur was written for, you know, laymen, so he doesn't really go into much depth. But this is what he says. Isha Shishama Shemeis Bala, B'makam Acher, a woman who heard that her husband passed away in a different place, Afilu Shama Mekama Anoshim Ksherim, even if she heard from a number of trustworthy people, like Tinasi B'li Sheles Chacham, she needs a competent rabbi, or usually a Bezdin, to make the decision that it's enough of a report that we could rely upon. Now, just to mention for a minute or two, the whole area of learning, known as the laws of agunas, span many, many volumes of rabbinic responsa, and even though it's only one siman in Shulchan Aruch, it's dealt with very, very much at length. The Neidei Behuda, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan Spector, they wrote many different responsa and different ideas, and just to touch upon a few of them for a moment. The question of the agunas of 9/11 basically was that we don't know how do we know that the husband was there? So, say they find a body part, but they had to know that it belongs to this person. So, they use DNA to identify it. Now, one of the questions that the Bat Dinim worked with was on relying DNA. And it comes from what we know in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that that a sign can be relied upon even for a Torah prohibition. For example, you find something in the street and someone claims that it's there. So you can return it to them. Why? Because there's a simon. What if someone brings a get, a divorce document? How do we know that it's the right one? Based on a simon, based on some discerning factor. So there's different levels of a simon. There's a simon Garua, a simon, you know, the person had a little birthmark, something that's fairly common, so that's not going to be a very good simon. There's going to be a simon amtsai, which is sort of in between. And there's going to be a simon mufak, something that's very rare. Some use the number 1 in 1,000. And this is something that many paiskim work with when it comes to the World Trade Center, that because the notion of a person, two people having the same DNA is so rare, so if the DNA tests were to show that this is the DNA of this body part that's found matches the person, then we could assume that this is the person. Now, obviously it's more complex than that. We have to understand how the testing works and if it's foolproof, but this is one of the areas discussed. Another area was discussed was if we can verify to a certain degree of certainty that the person was on the floor that nobody survived from. Right, if certain floors, let's say it was impossible for people to survive, and that's known as the concept of kibshon ha'esh, that if a person was in a furnace, God forbid, and it's impossible for them to survive, then that would be a reason to say it's okay. This was also used, let's say, in shipwrecks. The Chassam Sefer talks about it, that where it was impossible for people to survive, and we know the ship went down, then we could assume the person was there. Many Tshuva was written also after the Holocaust, or Moshe Feinstein and others wrote a lot about it, and again, these were very difficult times in Jewish history, and in the aftermath, they had to deal with all these questions. And one of the questions was, could we rely on certain majorities? Let's say the vast majority of people went in this situation, they died, so could we assume that this happened to this person? There's a concept from Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan Spector that if we have Trei Rube, if there's a double majority, then maybe that could be used. And sometimes they use that with the Holocaust or use that with the World Trade Center. But these are a little bit of the questions that were raised. But again, I would like to stress that these are questions that are answered by usually the biggest rabbis of the time, and it's not something that laymen or even regular rabbis usually deal with. Let's continue with Sif Yud Zayin. Hanech Shad Al Eishes Ish V'ger Shabayla Oishemes. We have a woman that she suspects on acting inappropriately with a certain person. And her husband either divorced her or died. Harizu Asura Loza Hanech Shad. She's not allowed to marry this person that there's rumors with her about. Why? Shekeshem Shasru Labal, Kachas Nasru Labal. The halacha is that if a man commits adultery with a woman, that he becomes forbidden to her. Just as a woman who committed adultery becomes forbidden to her husband, so she also becomes forbidden to the person that she had relations with. Now, so if it's true what happened, then they will be prohibited from marrying each other. And even if the husband divorced her only because he didn't like what was going on, but not that anything actually happened, that it was heard about her, that she was secluded with the nechshad, with this person that there was rumors about. So even though technically they're permitted to marry, because he did not have relations with her, so therefore she's not prohibited to him, but Chazal said that a person is not supposed to do things that cast doubts upon them. You know, there's this rumor going on that he had a relationship with her. And if the minute she gets divorced, or sometime after, she's going to go ahead and marry him, and people are going to say, well, look, it must have been true that they had that relationship. So a person is not allowed to do things that cast doubts on them, on their behavior, and therefore one is not permitted to do this. Let's continue with Sif Yud Ches. Sif Yud Ches continues with this theme, but in a little bit of a different way. Hanashad al Nachris bin Azgair, a person who there's rumors that he's had a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, and lo and behold, she becomes a convert. So lo yisen, he shouldn't marry her. Why? Because people are going to say that the reason why she converted was not because she wanted to really be Jewish, was just because to be able to marry him. So therefore, to remove that suspicion, they're not allowed to marry. Your test follows in the same way. So if your test in the Kitzur, Nachri Haba Abbas Yisrael, if a non-Jew, a non-Jewish man, had a relationship with a Jewish woman, V'achakach Nizgar, and then he becomes Jewish, Lo Yisa'ena, they should not marry. Now, the contemporary question that comes up a lot is, when you have an intermarried couple, and many times the Jewish partner, let's say, doesn't even know much about their Judaism, and then as time goes on, they both, the Jewish person discovers their Jewish roots, and the non-Jewish spouse becomes interested in Judaism and would like to convert full-heartedly. Now the question is, what do we do with this halacha that says that a person who's had the relationship before should not be married to the person afterwards? Now, many Paiskim, or Chaim Eisel, or Gersmeisha, many Paiskim see a difference between a situation where there's a rumor about a person when they're not Jewish, and then they become Jewish, so we're going to say, well, the conversion was motivated for the wrong reasons, or in a situation when they were already married. So therefore, if they were already married, and because of their ignorance, or whatever the reason was, they didn't know that they weren't supposed to be married, or they married anyways, so the fact that the spouse is converting is obviously not to facilitate them to be able to get married, because they did it already. As if the person would be, for the most part, Shomer Torah and Mitzvahs, and wouldn't marry them otherwise. So by letting them marry after the person converts, we're going to sort of spread this rumor that they were doing things that they should have been doing, perhaps, or that the conversion wasn't for the right reasons. But when everyone knows that they were married, and that was quite clear, so then we don't have this issue. So that's why, in situations where Batei Din, where a rabbinical court feels that the spouse is very serious about the Judaism, then many times they will let them convert and remarry according to Kedas Meshav of Israel afterwards. Let's continue with Sif Chaf. Hamagarish is a Isha Kadesh Yisa Isa Chaveira. So now the Kitzur addresses something what the Shulchan Aruch talks about, which is a very horrible practice, which is that, in moral practice, which is that people would divorce their wives so their friend could marry them. So Hamagar as a ishta, one who divorces his wife, Kadesh Yisa Isa Chaveira, in order that his friend should marry her, Afilu Lo Hisna Ima Beferish, even if they didn't say it outright, Ela Shenizkar. It's clear that's the reason for the divorce. It's prohibited for him to marry her, and again, because Chazal didn't want to encourage such behavior, and the Aruch HaShulchan speaks very strongly how immoral and terrible such behavior is. Let's continue with Sif Chafal. Those that are the rabbis, Chazal, say you're not allowed to marry? Afilu ba'isa mavei shehudar leisidar hi. Even in the same courtyard, they should not live. And again, the reason for it is because if they're living in close proximity, then people are going to say, well, look, they're living in such close proximity, maybe they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing. Because there is that relationship there, there is something there that people have been talking about or knowing about, and there's a fundamental obligation that a person has to distance themselves from any sort of rumor. Now, there's an interesting tshuva, there's an interesting responsa from the Divrei Malkiel, who was a great Rav in Lita not long before the First World War, and he discusses over there a case where some shaychtim, some ritual slaughterers, there was rumors about them, and the Bezdin, the local rabbinic court, wanted to force them to get retested. And it was a very interesting discussion. But the point that the Shechtim raised is that by believing the rumors and subjecting us to get retested, you're showing credence to the rumor, and you're basically disgracing us. So the Divrei Malkiel dealt with the issue because the Bezdin said that you have an obligation to be above all suspicion. So the Divrei Malkiel says that point is a very good point, but that is when a person does something to bring on the suspicion. So let's say in our situation here, if the person is living in close proximity, you're doing something that's going to cause people to ask questions. But in that situation, the Shechtim were acting correctly, and they weren't doing anything that was visibly wrong. So just to subject them to be tested, that wasn't right. He ends up working out with them a compromise, but this is a very interesting point, how a person, on the one hand, needs to be careful that their actions shouldn't raise suspicion, but on the other hand, a person should do the right thing, and they don't have to necessarily look over the shoulder for whatever people want to say about them. Let's continue with Sif Chav Beis. Misha Shomal Ishtay Shazinsa. A person who heard that his wife committed adultery, Afal Pi She'ein Adavar Borolai, that even though it's not clear, Tzarech Lasa Shelz Chacham Imutar Lod Ima, he should consult a rabbi, because there are many different complicated aspects of it. There's an issue here of namanas, is she believed? Sometimes a woman will say that just to spite her husband, or other questions. Now, generally, these things obviously happen when the marriage to begin with has a lot of issues, and that's why, you know, the rav involved should be very careful to realize that, and obviously to look at things more than just on the surface. Now let's continue with Sif Chav Gimel. Ishishin is Garsha Mishum Preach is a woman who is acting inappropriately, so a person who's God-fearing shouldn't go marry such a person because you're getting involved with someone that's that their behavior is questionable. Sif Chavdal, Isha Rabba Deyasa, woman who her behavior is very not proper, she causes a lot of arguments, and she doesn't act with the proper tznius. Mitzvah Lagarsha, Afilu B'Zivug Rishon, it's proper to divorce her even in the first zivug, which is considered to be more of a basharit, more made in heaven. But nonetheless, if it's if she doesn't act properly, then it's proper to divorce her. This is what the Kitzur says. Now, there's an interesting question that different dayanim, different rabbinic judges in Eretz Yisrael have dealt with, which is sometimes you have a couple that the husband's behavior is no better than the wife's behavior. So, but yet he comes to the rabbinic court and he says, listen, you know, my wife is doing this and she's doing that, and I want to divorce her. and you know, and it's her fault. And basically, what the rabbis say is that this whole concept is only talking when the husband is acting 100% the way he's supposed to be acting. And when they got married, she was also acting like that, and for whatever reason, she went off on her own. That's one thing. But in a situation where he was acting like that, and she was acting like that from the start, right? Let's say the couple weren't very religious to begin with, and then he becomes very religious, and then he says, "Well, look, you know, she's not following suit." That's a whole different story. When they got married, they were not in that position. So just because he changed doesn't make her responsible for that necessarily. Let's continue with Sif Chafhei. Mitzvahs Chachamim. The Chachamim teach us, they command us, Sheyisa Adam Banav Ubnaisav Samach Laperka, that one should marry off his children when they're young. Sheminichim Yavoy Lidei Znos Lidei Hirhor, because you're going to leave them to, you know, growing older, and they're going to have temptations, whether it's for Znos, whether it's for inappropriate acts, or Lidei Hirhor, or inappropriate thoughts. Val Zenem Ufakadata Navecha, that you should look at your nest, at your family, and you shouldn't sin, because the idea is you should make sure that they're not in that situation. Now, there's an interesting point over here in general. We find that a father is not supposed to strike his oldest son because he's putting a stumbling block in front of the son, that the son might strike him back. We also find in a similar way that even though there's a mitzvah, for at least in the times of the Gemara, if a young woman, for a woman whose husband passed away without children, to marry the brother-in-law, known as Yibum, but Chazal tell us that if she's very young and he's very old, then they advise her not to do that, to take Chalitza. Why? Because she's not going to be satisfied in the marriage if she marries someone a lot older than her. And Chazal said that we give her an Eitza Taiva, we give her good advice. And the basic concept we find here is that even though in Torah thought, you know, a person is responsible for their actions, but nonetheless, there's a very big obligation among parents and people in the position to do something, not to put people in a situation of temptation. So therefore, to put the older son in a situation where he's going to get mad at the father, if the father strikes him, one shouldn't do. One shouldn't put this young girl in the situation where she's going to be in a marriage that she's not happy with. So the same thing, a parent should help the child to get married at a young age in order that they shouldn't be in a situation that they might have temptation. V'chein mitzvah chachamim al bnei Yisrael. There's a mitzvah of the chachamim on husbands. Shemi shereya ishtoi eino hileches b'derech yishara. He sees his wife acting improperly. V'yesh le'eza kreivos im anashim k'sherim. She sees she's overly friendly with other men. He should mention this to her and bring this issue up to her, but the Kitzur stresses benachas in a soft way, b'derech tara, and in a pure way, to take away that stumbling block and to teach her in the right way. Now, the Gemara tells us in Gittin about how when a husband says before Shabbos that they should get ready for Shabbos properly, that he should do it benachas, and it says a story over there that if a husband is very strong and is very very makpid on everything in the house, that he's going to cause chil Shabbos. He's going to cause it. That what's going to happen? Say they forgot to light candles. So if the husband is going to be very angry at them, then they're going to light it anyways, even though it became Shabbos already. So therefore, he's going to cause them to do the wrong thing. Therefore, it's on the husband to use a very soft and gentle approach, because that's the way that people will be able to accept it from him. Well, al yamer lo b'feirish, but you shouldn't say to her outright, al tistri im plani. If he forbids her from secluding herself, then that could be a different problem. There's a parsha in the Torah, there's a concept in the Torah of saita, which is when a husband says to his wife, don't seclude yourself with this person, that if she secludes herself, then she could make herself prohibited. So therefore, he shouldn't do it like that. So you shouldn't say altis dreamish plenty. Not even privately without witnesses. Even because today there's no saita water, so therefore there's no way of removing this prohibition if he were to prohibit her. And it's unclear. Now I remember once seeing in a tshuva in a response from the Avnei Nezer that someone wrote to him that he had a dream that he said something to his wife that would imply that this prohibition of Saita, and he was all nervous about it, and you know, from reading it, you could obviously see that that this person was overly nervous type of person. And Avnezer writes back to him that, "I see you're just nervous and you shouldn't worry about it." And he writes that dimyon, that imagination, is sometimes the Yetzirah. And as the fact that you're overly nervous and overly concerned about things that didn't really happen, that could be the Yetzirah. And the point is that you shouldn't be overly anxious about these things. The Kisser continues, V'chol mi she'enu makbid al ishtoi v'al bono v'al b'nei beisai, a person who doesn't care about the way his wife and family act, v'enu mazhirenu foike drachim tomid, it doesn't help educate them and direct them in a good and positive way, ad she'eda she'em shleim kolchaz v'oven, until he knows that they're complete from any wrongdoing, hari zechayit, he's doing something wrong. Sh'nemer v'yodatik yishalom alecha, you'll know that you're tent as peaceful, fakartel nevecha, and you should look into what's going on in the house, v'lo yisechta, and there shouldn't be sin. So the bottom line over here is that the husband has an obligation to be a leader in the household. And a leader doesn't mean in a strong way, it means in a soft way, it means in a caring way, but to be a leader. Now obviously there are situations that need professional help and guidance, but as a general rule, we see that in a marriage and in a family, the husband has a role of leading in a very careful and sensitive way. Sif Chavav. Also, last is Shtei Chupas L'Shtei Achim, or L'Shtei Achayis V'Mechad. One should not make a double wedding for two brothers or two sisters in the same day. Mishum De'ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. There's a concept, they don't mix one Simcha with another Simcha. V'yesh Armer Ma'filu B'Shvua Echon. In 1 week, Ein La'Sayis, and what shouldn't be done, V'Rayam Yaakov Avinu, and a proof is from Yaakov Avinu, right, the famous story, that he married Rachel, and then actually, he married Leah first, and then Rachel. He waited a week. Ma'aleh shvua zayis. So therefore, one shouldn't do it back to back.